In the 1950s, George Reeves embodied the Man of Steel in Superman's first television adaptation, from its gritty black and white beginnings to the kid-friendly color years. To this day, an entire generation reveres George as their Superman, while for others, the show remains an overlooked chapter in the character's mythology. On this podcast, we bring everyone together as we break down each episode of Adventures of Superman. Welcome to a special edition of another exciting episode in the Adventures of Superman. I'm your host, Anthony Desiato. Our Season 2 coverage begins in 1 week, but first, a special interview with Jim Nolte, the man behind the Adventures Continue website. I hope you enjoy. Jim, welcome.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm doing well. I so appreciate you taking the time to join us on another exciting episode in the Adventures of Superman. No discussion of luminaries within the Adventures of Superman fandom would be complete without you. You've done so much over the years through your website, Facebook group, YouTube channel, the luncheons that you organize to really keep the flames of this fandom alive. And I want to talk about all of that. But to start, I really would love to go back to the beginning and to the personal side of all of this. Could you talk to me about how you first discovered the show, what the experience was like as a child watching it, how it became part of your routine, what it meant to you? I'd be so curious to hear.
I first saw Superman in 1953 during its original run. I was born in 46, so in 53, I turned 7. I was still 6 when the show started. And it was on 2 channels in my area in Pennsylvania. I caught it on WGAL, Channel 8 out of Lancaster, on Wednesdays at 6 o'clock, and on Monday night at 7 on WCAU-TV out of Philadelphia. And I know that I missed the first episode, Superman on Earth, and the second one was The Haunted Lighthouse, and that's the first episode I saw. And I can't explain it, but something clicked on, and it has held my interest now for these last 71 years.
That's absolutely amazing. I know you've talked and you've written about this, but I mean, what is it about the show and specifically George's depiction of the character that not only resonated so much then, but has continued to resonate with you over all of these decades?
I've tried to answer that. When you said, what is it about the show? I was going to say, well, it's George Reeves. What it is about George Reeves? I can't put that into words. It's his sincerity, his humanity, his generosity, his understanding, his demeanor. There is just something about that man that in the role of Superman that I like. I've certainly seen him in other roles, and while I enjoy those, I don't feel the same connection that I do with when he's playing Superman. He had a way of pulling viewers, me anyway, into that screen and becoming part of whatever it was they were doing. That's the only thing I can put into words.
Maybe in a way you've already answered this, but I know you've had the opportunity to meet or speak with a number of cast members over the years, but not George himself. If you had that opportunity, what would you say to him?
Well, of course, I'd have a lot of questions. And I think what keeps driving me as far as the luncheons and meeting people and is all of this that I've done over the last 50 years is a way to say, thank you, George.
Now that's beautiful. And I'm sure I speak for many fellow Adventures of Superman fans when I thank you for all of your work. And certainly as I've been learning more about the show and doing this podcast. Your website has been a great resource, and it's been wonderful to be part of the Facebook group as well. And that's actually one of the other things I wanted to ask you about. At what point and what inspired that transition from I'm a fan of the show, I love watching the show, to becoming this custodian of sorts of the show and creating the website and the group and the YouTube channel? When did that come into play?
Back in the 70s, when the series went off the air after George's death, although I don't think it ever went completely off the air, but in my area it did. I didn't see episodes between 1960 and 65 when it came back with the color prints, eventually showed up on television in 65. So I was away from it for a very brief period. And then in 65, like I said, the show aired again in color, at least the color episodes. And then by that time I was in college and I got married and started a family. And so I certainly had a lot of other things going on in my life. But then Gary Grossman's book, Superman Serial to Serial, came out in 1976. And I just credit Gary with rekindling that fire. And soon after I read his book, never dreaming that we'd become friends one day, I started to contact. His book allowed me to know that people involved with the series were still alive and acting. So I set about to contact those people as I could. And by 1980, I was sitting in Whitney Ellsworth's house having lunch with him and his wife. And later that same day, visiting with Bob Shane, I got to know Dabbs Greer, and we had a 30-year friendship. Jack Larson and Noel Neal followed soon. Sadly, Whitney Ellsworth died about a month after I had lunch with him. Let's see, that puts us up into the 1980s. And so I continued to correspond with many of the cast members, the regular cast members, as well as guest cast members, such as Sterling Holloway and Ben Weldon. And then Don Roden wrote to me one day, and he said he got my name from, I don't remember where he got my name, but he was considering doing a little magazine on Superman. Would I be interested in contributing some stories or facts? And I said, absolutely, yes. And so Don put out two issues. And then he said to me one day, he said, you know, I'm busy at work. I'm busy with a lot of things. I don't know if I can keep this up. I think I'm going to drop the idea of the magazine. Unless, he said, you'd be willing to take over. And so I thought about it for a little while and I said, yes. And then it went from there.
That's terrific. One of the other things I'm curious about, when you've connected with fellow fans, either in person or through the internet, through your website, through Facebook group, through email correspondence, what do you find fellow fans are most keen to talk about or that they're quickest to ask you? Like, I'm curious, those conversations, especially initially, what do you find that your fellow fans are, again, most interested in discussing when it comes to this show?
Well, the fan connection came up later in the 90s then, because prior to the 90s, the internet didn't exist. And so I didn't have that connection, although I did through Don's magazine in first issue, I think was 89 or 90, 89, I believe, 88. I started to get some letters, and so it was letters back and forth. And then I got a personal computer sometime around 94, 95, and AOL came about, and that opened up a lot of avenues. What they were interested in is, never thought about that before, just talking about the series in general and their feelings. I found out a common expression that almost everyone I talked to had was, I thought I was the only one. And then when we started communicating with each other, they realized they were not the only ones. And I think that just created this bond between everybody, because we all had that same feeling at one time.
Yes. And to be able to share that with someone, no, I know that can be very powerful. I've also gotten the sense, just from either people I've interacted with or just seeing comments online, I know there's, and your website, I know there's so much interest in the history of the show, the production history, the behind the scenes trivia. For example, you have on your website, The Adventures Continue at jimnolte.com, a whole section devoted to the summer of 1951 and the filming of the first season. And I'm just curious, for you, or from whatever you've been able to glean from your fellow fans, what is it you think that motivates such interest in the historical behind the scenes aspect?
Well, that was a fascinating summer, and I speak for myself, but I think I also speak for others in that they started that series. Bob Maxwell produced the first 26 episodes, and they started that without a clear idea of how they were going to do it. And they pulled it off magnificently. There are certain aspects of the George Reeves series that haven't been equaled. First of all, the casting of George Reeves. Secondly, the sound effects and the music, that Superman theme, the sound effects they used for the flying and the landing. When George Reeves Superman took off, you knew he was on a mission. It was that sound of him hitting the springboard or the floor or whatever and out the window, and along with the music that just set the tone, the right tone, for the viewers. And the fact that I was fortunate enough to have been able to talk to Whitney Ellsworth, although when I think back on it now, talking to him in 1980, I asked some very simple, silly questions. If only I could speak with him now, I'd have so many more questions for him. But he was so cordial, so nice to me and my family the day that we met him. And in the letters that we shared leading up to that. More about the first season. If you look at that in The Haunted Lighthouse, the first time he takes flight in The Haunted Lighthouse, you have a very odd flying scene. And we haven't been able to figure out whether that's a real person or a puppet on a stick of some sort. If you could include a shot of that in this later, that would be interesting, because he's whatever it is, the figure, the one arm is up, the other arm is down, and it just looks so odd. And you could tell they didn't know yet how to make Superman fly. And there they were producing this television series of 26 episodes and weren't really sure what they were doing it, but they learned quickly. And by the time that first season was finished, they had some really magnificent flying scenes, some of the best of the series, I think, when George is high above the clouds in that first season and you see as a small figure in the sky. It shows the vastness of space, and there is this little figure in the middle of the screen, which I just thought was tremendous.
One of the things that we talk about and that I know is always discussed is sort of the arc of the series, how you start with the very gritty crime noir first season, and then you have the softer, gentler season two, but still feels in keeping with what came before. And then we get into the color years and the more kid-friendly seasons. And I guess I'm just curious, do you have a favorite era of the show and just kind of how you feel about the arc of the series as a whole?
Well, first of all, there is no episode that I will pan. I just refuse to do that. I think to me, it's disrespectful to George and the others who worked hard to bring that out. Certainly, there are some episodes that are better than others, but I'm not going to disrespect any of them. My favorites, it is so hard to choose between the first and second season episodes, but I would have to say that my two favorites are Panic in the Sky and Around the World with Superman. Around the World with Superman is just everything that Superman should be. He's strongest man in the world, takes his time to help a blind girl. And you can tell the fun that George had. And one regret, I always wanted to talk with Judy Nugent, and she passed away last year. I tried so hard to get in touch with her, but she is one of those personalities that had put television behind her and didn't care to talk about it anymore. I tried reaching her through her son and through her former daughter-in-law, but no dice. But I really would have liked to have spoken with her.
No, I certainly can appreciate that. I feel like I have a good handle on the lightening of the show between the first and second season and what accounts for that. I'm curious, though, from the second season into the third, certainly I know they started filming in color and all of that, but in terms of the tone, what accounted for that further shift in those later seasons?
I contribute that to Whit Ellsworth. He was a cartoonist. He was, comic books were his background. And I think what we see there between the second and third seasons is Whit feeling more confident with himself and putting his stamp on it. He liked the lighthearted, all those names that you see in the Pepperwinkle and that kind of thing. That was Whitney Ellsworth, and so he took it in that direction. Although at the same time, I'm sure you're well aware that the comic book industry was under a lot of pressure. And so that may have contributed to some of it, but I'm convinced that it was mostly Whit Ellsworth. And talking with Whit and talking with his wife Jane after Whit Ellsworth died, and his daughter, by the way, I corresponded with her for many years after Whit's death. That was his style. That was the way he wanted to go, and he took it in that direction.
That certainly makes sense. One of the other things I was curious to get your take on, there are aspects of the Superman mythology that either were in effect in the comics at the time or would later be introduced in the comics or other media that were just not incorporated into Adventures of Superman. I think probably one example that people go to right away might be someone like Lex Luthor as an antagonist. I'm curious for you, are there any aspects of the Superman mythology that you would have liked to have seen incorporated into the show?
I saw the television show first, and then I found these comic books that, in my mind, were based on the television show. And so I never looked at it that way, that the television show didn't have any incorporate elements from the comic books. It was always the other way around. Why aren't the comic books doing the same thing that the television show it was doing? That's one of the questions, though, that I would have liked to have asked Wood Ellsworth, or would ask him now, why he chose to not include many of those things. Maybe again, it was his own. He wanted to put his stamp on it, and he wanted the shows to be his rather than copying the comic books. Bob Maxwell, of course, had done the radio version before, and even in the first 26 episodes, there's no mention of kryptonite. That first shows up in season two, where so I think Bob Maxwell had his own views, and he did not have a comic book background, so he was looking at it as an adult gangster show, really. And I think Whit Ellsworth, like I said, wanted it to be his brand, as it were, and did not include. But I would like to ask him that.
Yeah, it was just something that I was wondering about, especially when we talk about Luther, because that's a character that could be realized on a 1950s television, you know, budget, and certainly had been brought to screen with the Kirk Allen serial. So that's one that in particular I was always
right. And any of those mad scientists could have been Luther, could have been named Luthor, but Whitney chose not to.
Sure. One of the other things I was curious to ask you, how do you see yourself? Do you think of yourself as a George Reeves Superman fan? And maybe there are other aspects of the mythology you like, but it's George Reeves Superman first and foremost, or a Superman fan and George Reeves is your favorite?
George Reeves, I'm a George Reeves fan, and it's George Reeves as Superman that is so compelling to me. It's not especially the Superman character. As a matter of fact, this is something that others and I talk about a lot. We would not even mind seeing as a matter of fact, we'd welcome it, would have welcomed seeing a Clark Kent series. Clark Kent without Superman, just those Clark Kent, Lois Lane, Jimmy Perry, Spector Henderson, working as ordinary people would have been great stories, provided great stories for us. So it's not necessarily, certainly the Superman character is an added attraction, but George held that show together. George and John Hamilton, I think he was so wonderful in the role of Perry White. I don't think that's been repeated since either. So, but like I said, I this has been a part of my life since I was 6 years old. So it's really stamped in there. And people often send me things related to Superman, and I keep telling them it's not it's not Superman, it's George Reeves. It's that series that has my attention.
That, hey, fair enough. Have you experienced other or many other interpretations of the character, or do you generally tend to stay away?
Surely, I watched. No, I have no aversion to them, but I look at them and it's, you know, somebody pretending to be Superman and just take it for what it is to me. George Reeves, to me, was Superman, was a Superman. And that's what I, at the luncheon last July in Los Angeles, Jeanine Perreau, who played the little girl in the episode Joey, was with us, and she talked about George, and she had admiration for him too. And she said when she got the role of in Joey, she was still sort of, she was thinking, maybe I'm going to meet the real Superman. And she said, of course, George wasn't Superman, but he was a Superman. And she
His performance was truly magical throughout, and especially any time he had scenes with a child, there was really something to that. This is a very recent instance, but one that I wanted to get your take on: the Flash movie and its realization of the DC multiverse and the imagery of George Reeves. I was just I have my own take, which I'm happy to share. I'm just curious what your reaction to that was.
I would have liked to have seen more of George. It was just really a fleeting moment there at the end. I was glad to see it. I would have liked to have seen more. It was a nice tribute to George and others. And so I was glad it was there. That's really the only reaction I had to it.
Oh, fair enough. I'm certainly glad that he and Adventures of Superman were represented. I think I had a larger objection to the digital recreation of these actors. If they had done something where they just used some footage, for example, where you just kind of see these actual images from the show or from the Christopher Reeve movies, I think I would have preferred that as opposed to this sort of digital recreation. But all that being said, I am glad that if we were going to be seeing glimpses of other iterations, that George was represented.
Right. Yeah. I agree.
I also wanted to ask you, and this is kind of a big general question, so take it wherever you like, but are there certain myths, misconceptions, misunderstandings about Adventures of Superman that you've encountered in terms of what you've seen people say or write online or in person that you want to address, things that you know you would want to speak to?
Over 70 years, several things have been discussed. I'm trying to think. There's one episode where in the Mind Machine, where a gun is thrown at Superman and he ducks, and this comes up over and over and over again. I don't know how to respond to that. It was, if you look, the gun had been fired and then thrown. So it was a real gun. And it wasn't George as Superman in that instance. It was Dale Van Sickle. So here is a real gun being thrown at the person, Dale. And I think it was just a natural reaction to duck. But people... I don't know why they like to point that out and giggle, I guess, but it wasn't George and it was a real gun, so it was not going to not hurt him if it hit. Later in the first season, Czar of the Underworld, a gun is thrown at George and it. Clearly as a prop gun, and it does hit him on the chest and bounce off. Other things, I know there are some, and they are not coming to mind. So I'm going to have to duck that questioning.
No, that's perfectly fine. I also was wondering, just in terms of the demographic of fellow fans that you're encountering here, are you finding that they're primarily kind of folks of a certain age who grew up watching them either in first run or in reruns over the decades, or folks who came to it later, particularly after those DVD releases? What do you tend to find?
Oh, most of us are old. But there are some younger people, such as yourself. And I don't know how old each of them is, but if you look at the luncheons that I've had, I am 77 and probably older than most of them. I would say they're in their 60s and 70s, 60s and earlier 70s, but there are some younger people. I think the people of my generation are trying to pass it on to a younger generation. Then there are those who caught Superman in the 60s and 70s when it came back in color, and they know it only through reruns. But I would say generally the age is we're an older group, and we worry about that because as we fade out, George isn't going to have the same adoration that he currently has.
One of the things I'm happy to say, because I've heard from enough audience members, there are people who are new or newer to the show who have been rewatching the episodes along with us as we've been doing the podcast. So I'm happy for that. And yeah, for myself, wonderful, as someone who's newer to this, and certainly those DVD releases were really key for me. Kind of on that note, a frustration of mine is the lack of availability of the show currently. I know you can buy it digitally. I know, you can track down DVDs. But when DC had its initial version of its comic book app that also included video content, Adventures of Superman was there and it was great. And I was certainly hoping that that show would make the jump over to what then became HBO Max. And it, unfortunately, it didn't.
And I don't understand that either. That's a big hole there. Also, with the DVD release, they are advertised as being complete episodes, but there are several that are edited. And of course, they didn't use the original opening. They didn't have the commercials, the previews, the commercial bumper. I would have liked to have seen a better job on the DVDs than they have.
Have you ever spoken to anyone from Warner's or spoken to someone who did? Have any insight into their kind of view on this?
No. One glaring example is the stolen costume, which is I have never seen in recent years anyway. I've never seen a good copy of that. I don't know why. I know that a better copy was offered to Warner, but they didn't, at least according to the person who spoke to me, Warner didn't seem interested in having a better copy. But I can't speak for Warner. I never talked to anybody from there, so I don't like to criticize without knowing reasons why things are the way they are. They may have a very good reason for what they produced.
Sure. I know that when we had the release of the Superman Returns movie, I know that spurred a lot of content being released on DVD. And my hope is that as we now approach another new Superman movie, maybe we might see something similar and start to see some of these things reissued or put on Blu-ray or whatever the case. Maybe not this show, but others as well, like Lois and Clark. But I guess time will tell. But I'm glad. I proudly have those DVDs on the shelf, and I'm glad that we at least have those.
Right.
We've mentioned the luncheons. Can you tell me how they came about? What are they like? How does one get to go to one of these? What's the deal with the luncheon?
They came about by accident, really. In 2000, 2001, rather, it was coming up on the 50th anniversary of the television series production of the first season in 1951. So in 2001, a friend of mine, Armand Vaqueur, suggested that we do something to honor the series. And he had connections with the Los Angeles County Board of Supervisors. He said, he asked if I'd be interested in getting together a little ceremony of sorts, if he could get the Board of Supervisors to proclaim Superman Week in Los Angeles. And of course, they're always looking for things to promote the city. And this would get a little publicity. And I said, sure, I'd be interested in working on that. And so in July of 2001, the Board of Supervisors agreed to do, they said, about a 10-minute session during the regular board meeting. And I don't know how it came about, but I said I would be there, and my daughter wanted to go along to Los Angeles with me, and I was glad to have her with me. I probably wouldn't have gone without her. But somehow I managed to get a hold of Robert Rockwell, names give me a problem. Luke Benson in Superman in the Moment. I can't think of his name right now. Can you?
No, I don't have that offhand. I'm sorry.
Okay. Oh, I really apologize, but I have trouble with names sometimes. And Jack and Noel. There were two representatives there from. Or a representative there from Warner, Michael Walbrecht, and president of DC Comics at the time, Paul
Levitz.
Paul Levitz.
That name I had.
Yes, I. And Laura Siegel was there, and so we had this ceremony, and each of them said a few words, and I had a presentation. I have it on YouTube if you care to see it sometime. It's on my YouTube channel. And at the time, I was afraid I had too many people because they kept telling me, no, we have to keep this to 10 minutes. And as it turned out, it went for an hour, and people from the other people in the building left their workstations and came to watch the presentation. So it turned out really well, and it could have been more than it was. If I had known we could sneak all those people in and have all those little speeches, I would have invited more people. But so I enjoyed that. That was really great. And then Paul Levitz took everyone out to lunch. And we were prepared to pay for this lunch, but when it ended, Paul said he will take care of it. And I just looked at him. I said, are you sure? He said, we enjoyed this publicity. So that was really nice of him. And I have not thanked him enough over the years for that kind gesture. And so then in 2005, I was back in Los Angeles when Noelle Neal turned 85, and her friend manager, Larry Ward, had a nice party for her at the Garland. And then I thought, I wonder if we could get people to come again. I started out the first one in New York City. I had a dinner in New York, and can't remember, there were maybe 40 people there, 35, 40. And then I did another New York one in 2011. And then I was talking more with Larry Ward, and he said, I think he said, if you need help getting one organized for Los Angeles on a larger scale, I'll gladly give you some pointers and advice. So I took him up on that, and that turned out to be just a magnificent day, weekend. Jack Larson was with us. And I can remember him at the end. He said, I now love Superman too. And he was so delighted to be a part of it. He told me later, he said, that was an extraordinary day. And again, unfortunately, he died a year later. And then we had another one in Sarasota in 2017, back in California in 2018, and now this latest one in California in 2023. How you get there, how you get invited, I invite anybody in my Facebook group. And so we had close to 100 people this past July.
That's tremendous. And how far did people come from to attend this?
Well, in 2014, we had some from Australia.
Wow.
And two people from Australia, and really all over the country, East Coast, West Coast, middle of the country, Australia. The one fellow from Australia, he also came to Noel's 85th birthday party, and I don't know how he survived it. He flew in, attended the party, and flew right back to Australia. He was wiped out by that time.
Yeah, I can imagine.
He says he'll never do that again.
Wow. Well, we've mentioned your website, and like I said, it's been a tremendous resource. Perhaps my favorite part of it is the comic book adaptation of the unproduced screenplay Superman and the Secret Planet, drawn by Randy Garrett. What a delight that was. Could you talk about how that came to be? Because that, what a treat. And for anyone who hasn't read it, I can't recommend it enough.
Randy and I were friends for a long, long time, and from the very beginning of the print version of The Adventures Continue, he did illustrations for me, and he was always glad to do them. He was kind, he was gracious, generous in his time and talent. And when I got a copy, again, some of this goes back now so many years, and it's hard to remember exactly how things came to be, but I got a copy of the script to Superman and the Secret Planet, and Randy and I just talked, and he said he'd like to just illustrate some of it. I said, that would be fine. I'd love to see that. Well, he started then, and he did such a great job. I said, let's just continue this. And it runs 40 some pages, I think. And it took years to complete it, but Randy stuck with it, and he supplied the illustrations. I added music to it, and there it is. And I enjoy it too. It's just a tremendous talent.
It really is such a treat. Did you ever hear anything from DC, or did he, as far as you know?
Mm-hmm.
I know over the years, DC published comic books set in the style and continuity of the Adam West Batman show and the Linda Carter Wonder Woman show. Sadly, I feel like the ship has sailed, but at the time, did you have any hope that we would see a George Reeves Superman comic from DC?
I we always hope. We always hope for anything to promote the television series. I would have liked to have seen that, yes. And it was suggested several times by others, not myself, who had some connection to the Warners, but I don't know what their, I don't know if it's, as far as I know, they own the George's likeness. They can do, they could do that if they wanted to. I don't know why they don't. Some people speculate, well, you know, George's suicide maybe has something to do with it, but I think we're way past anything like that. We understand if in fact George committed suicide, we understand how the facts of life. Some people commit suicide, and while it's unfortunate, it's nothing to shun or to be ashamed to admit to by Warner that happened.
Right, and especially the fact that these days there's such a more open discourse about mental health and mental health awareness. So I would hope that would not be a roadblock instance like this. Well, in any event, I do hope people will go to the website and read Superman and the Secret Planet. It's really tremendous. And again, for anyone who hasn't read it, if you've watched this entire series, and it's this bonus, and you get to see a story of such a different scope and scale than you typically would see on the show, but it still feels like the show. It's great.
Right. We got President Eisenhower in there. And, if you look at some of those closing panels, you see that Randy paid tribute to myself. I'm in one of the illustrations, or more than one, I think, and some other friends are in there along with some of the characters from the Superman television series.
This is such a specific question, but the title of this podcast, Another Exciting Episode in the Adventures of Superman, comes from the end of that opening in the first season. And I know that line gets dropped moving forward. I was just curious, any sense why? Because I feel like it's such a great way. And now another exciting episode, such a nice way to kind of tee it up. What accounts for that?
No, I don't have any idea why that was dropped. Again, there was Maxwell's the first season, and Witt didn't continue to use that, although almost all the other elements are there, but not that.
And I will let you go. I don't want to keep you too long.
I'm enjoying this.
Oh, terrific. As am I. I really appreciate you taking the time. This, I feel like, is such an obvious, maybe basic question, but the shift in Lois Lane performer moving from season one to season two, because right now I've started my season two recordings. We're well into season two. Of course, I've already seen all of season two. But I'm just kind of curious. Again, I'll kind of make this an open-ended one too. Take it wherever you want, but just kind of your take on this change in Lois, what each one brought, anything that you might want to share on that front. Because I know it's something, going back to one of my earlier questions, with things that people talk about with respect to the show. I know that's a big one.
I always, whenever anybody asks me that question, I always say Phyllis was perfect for the first season and Noelle was perfect for the remaining seasons. Phyllis had an edginess, an earthiness that I admired. She was just, I knew Phyllis for several years back in between 2000 and 2002. We spoke on the phone often. And I helped her to sell some of the pictures online, autograph pictures. And I enjoyed talking with her. And I also was great friends with Noelle for almost 20 years, I guess. Each was just right for the times and the production. And I won't say which one I like best.
Fair enough. But I do think the way that you put it, makes sense. And when we take into account the shift in tone, I think that's a very fair assessment. And, they both certainly brought, so much to it, and are really iconic performances, each in their own right. those were essentially the questions that I had. Is there anything else that you've never been asked that you would want to talk about, or just anything else that you want to discuss with respect to this, or just anything else you want to say before we part?
The only thing I'd like to add is that what has developed over the last 70 years is a community of friends. And I get great pleasure from seeing members of the Adventures Continue Facebook group and people I've known for so many years get together and enjoy each other's company in the name of George Reeves. My daughter and son-in-law recently took a trip to Florida to meet up with some friends, and they call that the Sunshine Chapter of the Adventures Continue. And I have developed a close friendship with several people, and we meet on Zoom every Monday and Friday evening, and we call ourselves the Superman Group. I also loved having Jeanine Perot and Beverly Washburn and Greg Moffat at the last luncheon. And Greg said he is overwhelmed sometimes by how well he has been received by the group. He said, I don't know why. I was in one episode for a few minutes, and this group has embraced him. But I think that's the whole legacy of George Reeves, that this friendship that has developed. I think we'd all like to give George a big hug and a thank you. But what we can't do that, but what we can do is embrace each other in George's name. And that's what keeps driving me forward.
Oh, that's a beautiful sentiment and well said, and I think a perfect note to go out on. So I want to thank you again for everything that you've done for the show and this fandom. And thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show.
I had a great time. Thank you very much, Anthony.
My thanks once again to Jim and to everyone for tuning in. Our season 2 coverage begins in 1 week with 5 minutes to Doom. My guest is Voices from Krypton author Ed Gross, who joined us at the end of season 1 for our coverage of Superman and the Mole Men. Please make sure that you are subscribed via your podcast platform of choice, and that way you'll never miss an episode. Come back next week, and until then, remember, only Superman can do super things. Be sure to check out our sister podcast series, Digging for Kryptonite, A Superman Fan Journey, a weekly exploration of Superman's vast 85-year mythology, available wherever you get podcasts. Please join us on social media, become a patron, and subscribe, rate, and review today. Links are in the show notes. Thank you all.